All right, everyone, we're back. Another episode of Inside Boxing presented by PPV.com in association with Uncrowned and Yahoo Sports. I'm Dan Canobio. He's the champ, Chris Algieri. And this Saturday night, Sebastian Fundora puts his 154-pound title on the line against Keith Thurman. It streams live on PPV.com. I will be hosting the live interactive chat. Those of you that have ordered with PPV.com know the deal by now. Great stream, no subscriptions. Stream it to every device that you have. And the live interactive chat, you'll have me in there. So if you ever wanted to pick the brain of Dan Canobio while watching a pay-per-view card, this is your chance. It's a really fun night. PPV.com has been our proud presenting sponsor for several years now. So if you're going to order the fight, think about doing it with us. And we'll have a great night on Saturday night. Should be a fun card. As we kick off the boxing schedule from here on out, the next couple of weeks, next couple of months, it's going to be a mad dash with a lot of good fights. And we will have a full breakdown of Fundora Thurman on this episode and the entire PPV.com card. Chris, we missed you on Sunday. Najee Grampus stepped in and he did a phenomenal job. But we're happy to have you back. Chris, the traveling man, coming to us from another hotel. I don't even know where he is at this point.
Well, notice the glasses. I'm now a California guy. I've been here so long. I have turned into a California guy. So now I wear sunglasses. No, it's really bright over here.
I'm drinking raw milk.
I'm over by the water in San Pedro, which is just outside of LA over there. But it's really nice over here on a marina. But yeah, man, living out of a suitcase for the past 10 days, not great. But listen, gotta get those checks, bro. Gotta get those checks. The money don't make itself.
10 days. 10 days on the road, living out of a suitcase, but you didn't check the bag.
No checked bag.
That's insane. How many pairs of underwear did you pack? Under or over 10?
Under. I've been washing. My hotels have laundry, so I've been washing my stuff. Yeah. Living so that I don't have that much clothing. I don't have to, you know. But I had to have three suits. It's like two suits. That's the tough part. That takes up so much space, and all this equipment that I have to have for our podcast. So.
I have to. You love to have, right?
Need to have. Of course I love it. Need to.
But Pro Box and all
needs
that
to sound good.
Yeah. Pro Box, Inside Boxing Live, another Pro Box on Saturday night. In addition to Moses Atalma, also fighting in the afternoon. We'll talk about that as well. There's a lot to get to. A lot of news and notes before we get into the Fundora Thurman breakdown. And unfortunately, we have to start with some legislation. Inside Boxing legislation. Because the Muhammad Ali Revival Act is one step closer to becoming the law of the land. It's now headed to the Senate floor, where it is expected to pass through there and go right to the desk of Donald Trump. President Trump will most likely sign off on that. The U.S. House of Representatives voted in favor of it. This is not breaking news here. We've been talking about this for a while. So it's going to be signed into law. The boxing structure, the business structure, is going to be changed forever. UBOs, less interim titles, course of contracts, all of it is coming to fruition a lot quicker than a lot of people thought. But that's what happens when you have the ear of highly ranked government officials. U.S. Representative Brian Jack said he is confident that this law won't create a boxing monopoly. That's interesting. He says the legislation allows for as many UBOs to enter the space as possible. So the notion of a monopolistic, nailed that, anything refers to the one entity singularly. My hope is that you're going to see a lot of UBOs. We don't want a lot of UBOs, Chris. That means more segregation. That means more problems. That means more sides of the streets when you have more UBOs because you can't co-promote when you have your own UBO.
Yeah, I wonder who got in this guy's ear and got him to push this thing through, and you know how the lobbying works in this country. And you said it's amazing how fast it's been pushed through, you know, because you know you have the ear of Donald Trump. That's not all you have. They have a ton of money too, and this stuff, legislation costs money makes the world go around. That's how you get laws put into place. So yeah, this is but this is something, again, like you said, we've been talking about this. This was inevitable. The powers that be have everything on their side to do this. They've done this before. They know how to do stuff like this. So I'm not surprised at all. The speed of which has been crazy. It's so fast. Like Zuf has been around for a year and they've already been able to change legislation. So it's pretty wild times. But Yeah, I don't know how this pans out. We're literally changing the entire structure of how the sport is run.
Yeah, Zuffa has been lobbying for years, going back to their existence, going back to the early 2000s in Vegas to form what is now the UFC and have it go to their benefit, which ultimately led to a monopoly, which ultimately led to antitrust lawsuits, which is what they're looking to do with the boxing paradigm. And it's interesting because you see a lot of people come out in support of it, right? You see like a Mike Tyson come out in support of it. Obviously, Dana White is in support of it. Then you see people come out in not support. That's Bob Arum. That is USA Boxing completely changing course. That is Nico Ali Walsh, the grandson of Muhammad Ali, which the law was written with him in mind, come out and say that it is this is not what we want. I ultimately don't, you know where we stand. I ultimately don't think it's a good thing. I don't think having a UBO is a good thing. I don't think having coercive contracts for fighters is a good thing. I don't think taking rights away from fighters is a good thing. Do I think it would benefit women's boxing? Yes, because I feel like they could benefit from more of a structure where there's not as big of a talent pool and not the same financial structure. The difference between men and women's boxing is the fact that there is way more upside financially for the men, and you should not be getting money taken out of your fight purse, which is what these UBOs and what Zuffa wants. So if Zuffa gets into boxing, and for years they were talking about getting into it, right? Dana White, I'm dipping my toe in 2017. I don't want to do it. It's too many. I don't like it. It's too fucked up boxing. No, the reason why is because you couldn't rewrite the law. Like, what does it say about Zuffa?
No, the reason why is because he didn't want to use his own money. The reason that's the big reason. It all comes back down to money. Follow the money, Dan.
But Chris, if you're getting into boxing and you have to rewrite the laws in order to get into it, what does that say about what you're building?
Well, the funny thing is that they explicitly say they're coming to take over. They're coming to make a monopoly. And right. So let's change the rules so it's not what we're doing is not actually illegal. I mean, it's so on the nose. It's wild that you know people won't see that. It's so obvious.
Some fighters will benefit from it. This is something we've talked about on past shows, like the guys that are signed to Zuffa, the Julian Hammerhands, the low-level guys that are going to work their way up, who don't really have a platform, don't really have a performance institute, don't have some of the health benefits and all that. Yes, I agree. Like that's something that Dana White has been saying since day one is, hey, guys, we're not rewriting anything. You know, we're just giving you an option. You're going to have a UBO structure, the Revival Act, which they named it, which is a very smart name because when you think revival, you think you're fixing something and you're making it better. So Dana White is out there saying, you know what, like, this is going to be a good thing. Like, if you're a fighter, now you have a choice. It just gives you more options. And to be honest, not to throw under the bus here, but I can't believe this. Some respected boxing media, like Dan Rafael, is kind of regurgitating some of Dana White and Zuffa's talking points by saying that you don't have to sign with Zuffa if you're a boxer. There's nothing out there saying a gun to your head that you have to sign with Zuffa. No, but you know what it is, Chris? If Zuffa has their way in the next 10, 20 years, however many years, this will be the only law. This will be the law of the land. There will be no options. There will be no other promotions. You will have to sign with Zuffa and follow their rules. That's why I didn't quite understand some of the media members out there that are saying that this isn't that big of a deal.
Yeah, I was thinking that myself. Like, I mean, how much does this really, is this really going to matter? It's hard to say because we're entering a whole new world. But also, if this rule is changed and there's the or, you can do the old one. If the promoter can use the new one, why wouldn't he? Because promoters, they I know these guys are coming out and you know for it, but at the end of the day, whatever serves them is the way they're gonna operate. So if there's a loophole, because promoters they didn't like the Muhammad Ali Act either. They want to be coercive. They want to be dominant. They want to be able to force fighters to take what they take, you know, in terms of the pay. So that's what scares me. Because, I'm not so sure Zuffa is going to completely take over the way they are intending to, especially with all these new deals that are being placed with the networks. But in terms of what this is going to do, even for the old guard, the other promoters and their ability to take advantage and exploit fighters, which has always been the case, they're not gonna skip a beat on that either. So that's what scares me. It's very, very dangerous all around.
Yeah. You think, like, what's stopping, like, a matchroom? I'm not saying this, but what's stopping a matchroom from forming their own UBO?
Right. Bob, Top Rank, Golden Boy. I mean,
I don't
all
think
these
they will, though.
I don't know.
Not right away because they want to work.
No, not right away. They got to save face.
Yeah,
you got to save face.
Yeah, and they also
want
to be they want to draw a line in the sand and say, listen, we're traditional. And I heard you mention like what's going on with the networks. And I think that's a huge thing. Like Golden Boy, Top Rank going to DAZN. And now a whole different tune that you're hearing from DAZN. They're putting more emphasis on North American fights. They want to put on 50 to 52 marquee fights a year. I'm pretty sure there's 52 weeks in a year. So that would be every Saturday night they want to put on a really good boxing event. And
let's go.
Think they want to get away from Turkey. I think they want to get away from that paradigm. I honestly think that we're seeing like a Zuffa versus the rest of them, like we thought would happen. And that's what's happening with this DAZN. This is all speculation. It's just how I'm reading the tea leaves. And
how you're reading the room.
Too, right?
Yeah, I do. I think there is – I think that Zuffa showed their hand too early, and it allowed the other promoters to work out deals and combine together. They're like the Avengers now, coming together, all to work together. And it's basically two different sandboxes. You got everyone on the DAZN, and then you've got the Zuffa side. So the line has been drawn in the sand, and we're seeing it, and we're seeing these skirmishes. But I think these skirmishes are starting to turn into like all out war, because. The lines have been drawn, like I said.
Heading over to some similar news, Joey Opetaia officially stripped by the IBF of his cruiserweight title. He keeps his ring belt. He keeps his Zuffa belt. And is the Ring Magazine belt next for Joey Opetaia in terms of getting stripped? If you go to Ring Magazine's website, if you look up their rules, you must fight a top five opponent within a two-year span. It's one of the many rule sets they have in terms of getting stripped. You can't do PEDs. You can't be out for more than a year. There are several criteria when it comes to getting stripped of the Ring Magazine belt. And the reason I bring this up is because the Ring Magazine belt is more in focus now. People are looking at that as the end-all be-all, or at least Ring Magazine wants it to be that. Fans are saying, you know what, screw the WBC. The Ring Magazine belt is the one that matters. But unless they enforce their rules and unless they make the right fights, and they can't even mandate fights, is another reason why I'm not 100% sold on Ring Magazine. If they can't enforce the rules, they're no different than the WBA. They're no different than
IBF. It's actually weaker. They don't enforce any of the rules. They're definitely not going to strip Jai. The rules are fugazi. It doesn't matter. They do what they want. It's a trophy. It's not a real belt. So that's why there's no teeth. You can't enforce rank, the people to fight each other. You basically are fighting to keep it. You have to follow their rules. They can't mandate it unless they change that. Which, listen, they're changing the legal framework of the sport, so it's very possible. But they're definitely not going to strip Jai. I've said time and time again, he is the tip of the spear for these guys. That's their big first signing. He is a world champion. And I remember I was talking about skirmishes, and this is why I said this, because it was going to segue right into this Jai Opetaia thing. There is all-out war declared now between Zuffa and the IBF. Like that, they're not skirmishing anymore. They were skirmishing up until this point. Now it's an all-out war, and you're going to see lawsuits. You're going to see back and forth. They IBF is standing on business, which is what they always do. They are the governing body that actually does do that. They will strip you. They will enforce mandatories. They will do things like this, draw a line in the sand, and actually hurt themselves in order to stand on their ethics. So very interesting to see how that's going to play out. But yeah, all that war has been declared. The governing bodies in Zuffa are now head to head in a conflict.
And when you say IBF, they're just the first one. Like this was a trial run. This was a, Jai Opetaia is a pawn, for lack of a better term. He's the guinea pig here. He's the cruiserweight champion of the sanctioning bodies that was signed by Zuffa. That whole thing played out like it did. It was messy, and he ultimately gets stripped of it. And I don't blame the IBF. They have rules, and like you said, they stick by him. And it's amazing. The reason why I believe they're so strict is when the FBI starts investigating your company like they did 10, 15 years ago, then you're going to have to start. Remember when the WBA was almost in trouble a few years ago with all their, five different belts? And
oh, yeah.
The one part of the Ali Act, Revival Act, that I like is they're going to get rid of interim belts. There are good parts about it.
I do like that as well. Less belts is good, but UBO just seems like there's going to make more belts. But one just the one belt idea or the one promotion idea that is what the UFC model
scary.
Is. It's very scary. And fighters now have very little very little to stand on when they have to fight back, and they have to fight back against a promoter. I'm a fighter who famously had to actually push back on my promoters and actually use the Muhammad Ali Act with some kind of grounds to be able to actually bring legal action against my promoter because I felt like I was being exploited. So it has worked in the past, but you know, one of the things that I've always said about the Muhammad Ali Act, you know, the original one from the 2000 from John McCain, it didn't have any teeth either, but it gave you something to bring to the table. Something to bring to the table to fight back. Now that's gone. There's nothing to fight now. If you look at these contracts that they're allowed, and you have seen the Zuffa contract, have you not?
Yes.
I mean, I'm sure every contract is different, of course, but you know the basic contract I've read is like there's some very disturbing things in there in terms of looking at it from a fighter's perspective. And I've been in bad contracts. I know what they look like. It's a really scary thing.
And these are worse, you say?
Oh yeah. Oh yeah, you can't get out of these things, and you can't fight anywhere else.
6 years.
Yeah, it's the sunset clause, which I think they might have pushed back on that actually, but I thought I read that somewhere. But regardless,
there is going to be some pushback still.
Yeah, the fight's not over, but I do believe it is an inevitability, unfortunately. But
it's like you're down like several points on the card. It's the 12th round. You need a knockout,
and you're in their hometown. And the crowd's behind them. It's all bad. But
and the judges are all compromised.
But you still fight on. You still fight on.
Still fight on. Oscar said he's going to go and speak in front of the Senate. That's what's next. Is they're going to speak in front of the Senate?
Who better than Oscar?
Right.
Oscar's been on all sides.
And speaking of the ring, this all ties in. He went on Ariel Helwani's show. Go check it out. Shout out Uncrowned, and said that he regrets selling Ring Magazine.
I saw that.
The Saudis, because he feels like the ratings are thrown out the window. It feels like the integrity is gone. And back to the Jayapataya thing, you know, he's coming on May of 2026, which is less than a month or 6 weeks away, he will have failed to fight a top five contender, a ring-rated top five contender. So therefore, he should be stripped. Put this on Twitter, and everyone came out and started tagging Dougie Fisher, started tagging Adam Abramowitz, started tagging The Ring. Hey, guys, can we get a ruling on this? Dan brings up a good point. What's the deal with Opataya? Is he going to get stripped? And I thought, shout out to Dougie Fisher. He actually answered it and gave a very insightful answer. He said it's in discussions. He said, where is it? I have it right here. He said, we have a ring ratings panel of more than 20 media members worldwide to discuss the debate on given the rules. He also said that there are some that are leaning on stripping him. Dougie doesn't believe they should strip him. And their reasoning is because that he is widely looked at as one of the most ducked fighters at cruiserweight. Like, they tried to make fights with Zerto. They tried to make fights with other top five fighters rated by The Ring, and they fell through. So therefore, it is a special case, and we have to use some discretion. What are your thoughts on that?
I call bullshit. Ducked. It's the cruiserweight division. Everybody wants to fight everybody. You got to.
How do you prove
everybody.
That?
You can't. That's why. It's like when you say I have a back injury. Well, you can't prove it. Like, but so you say it because it'll work. But yeah, no, he ducked. In this day and age where guys are actually fighting each other, and the cruiserweight division, there's not a lot of money, so people have to fight. It is a weak division in terms of, you know, the population, the talent pool, rather. But no. They're not going to strip him. And if that tells you right there, they're not going to strip him. Some of the media members are saying he should be stripped. But if Dougie Fisher doesn't think so, and he has an actual reason that he's using, then definitely not going
to
strip
him. He said it's up to their votes right now, more in favor of stripping him. But there are documented cases of top five cruiserweight swerving Jai despite career-high payday offers. I'm not in favor of stripping him. Once again, like, how do you prove that? Yeah, are you pulling up like paperwork from Zerto Ramirez? I'm swerving.
Like, yeah, I am not fighting.
I want no part of that man. Signed Zerto Ramirez. Like, no.
No, he's way too good.
Yeah, and like if you go back even further, like Brides in 2024, this is the rematch. He wasn't even ranked in the top five. So we're going on 3+ years. Of Opataya not fighting top five opponent in the
and who is the top five? Does it have to be a ring ranking?
Ring like, rated top five. It's their belt.
Okay.
And this all could have been avoided if he fought Noah Mikkelin.
Oh,
like he should have.
Noel, yeah. Mikkeljean.
I screwed his name up. But the WBC champion who beat Bobby Jack.
I might be screwing it up too, honestly. I mean, it's
Noah. We'll just say Noah. The WBC champion who beat Bobby Jack was sitting right there. Didn't they do a face off? I'm pretty sure Zuffa posted it and then deleted it.
They sure did. They did a face-off. at the Apex. Yeah, and Jai wanted to do that fight. It's a unification
fight. I like Jai Apatia. He wants to fight everyone.
I do,
but do I have sympathy for him? Do I have pity for him? No, because you sign on dotted line. You are your own team. Like, you know this, yep. Chris, more than anyone. You're the boss. This Team Algeri. Everyone else that works with you, they work for you. You sign on the dotted line, you're making decisions for your career. So when Apatia signs with Zuffa, he has to know that these things are coming down the pipeline. He has to know that I can't become undisputed. I'm going to get stripped. It's going to be a big mess, but I'm going to get paid. He got paid, which I can't fault him, but live with the ramifications.
Yeah, and I don't know. Again, I don't know what's in there. We never know what's in the contracts. We never see the contracts. The contracts are always unique to the situation. I would be surprised. Maybe not. Maybe not. Maybe this could be a big mistake on Team Apatia, but they should have had some kind of wording in there regarding his title and regarding what happens with him, you know, competing for Zuffa with his title. He's a world champion, and the fact that he wanted to have these other belts, like, you know, because we know Zuffa came out immediately, was like, no other belts. This is the only belt that's going to be recognized. But then you sign Jai Apatia, and he's a world champion, and the guy is openly speaking about unifying. Even in the post-fight interview with Max, like, all he talked about was unifications and fighting the guys with belts.
Talked about it in his opening video when he signed with Zuffa, like,
exactly.
Their promo video.
Right. So, like, the narratives were different, but I don't know what they were telling him. Because even Dana came out and said, oh, if these guys want to have their dream fights, we'll allow them to fight for these titles. Pretty sure that was an official thing that they came out with, even though I know they don't want to have that down the line. But I don't know. The communication seems like it's all messed up with these guys. I agree with you. I like Jai a lot. I think he's the best cruiserweight in the world. I think I want to see him fight all of those guys. But dude, you signed away your dreams for this, and you got to live with that decision. If I'm sure your lawyers read the contract, and it's in there. So this is what it is, and you know what these guys are coming to do. They're coming to take over, and they literally said we're not going to recognize other belts. So you had to know at some point that your belts were not going to matter. My question is, Dan, and I brought this up to Paulie the other day. What happens if Jai isn't happy? What if he gets trapped in this echo chamber, is not allowed to fight for titles, and literally is like, I want to be a unified champion. This is what I came to this sport to do, but now I can't get the fights with those guys. I can't fight for those titles anymore. What if he starts getting vocal about being unhappy when he is, like I've said, the tip of the spear for Zuffa, biggest signing, huge signing, great fighter. And if he sit there and goes, guys, I'm stuck on an island by myself over here. I want out. That's a major blow.
Will he do that? He doesn't seem like he has that in his makeup, but we haven't seen him pushed this far, and we haven't seen him in a situation like this. Stripped again, second time stripped by the IBF. What is he, like, approaching 30? Like, he's in his prime.
I think he's actually 30.
In his prime money-making, in his prime physical. Like, there's fights right there. If he goes out and fights Noah, WBC champ, next, he should. They should just do that next.
Yeah.
And like, yeah, okay, the IBF's on the line, but okay, but in your, like, if you don't need the belts, this could be the whole argument of you don't need belts to define a fighter. Then fight the winner of Zerto Benavidez, and then you are quote unquote undisputed.
Mm-hmm.
But if they're going to feed, like, if they're going to put another Glanton out there who they magically, he came ranked 14 by the IBF the week of the fight or right beforehand in order it to be a voluntary defense, and
I think they're realizing traversing this sport's a lot harder than they expected. You know, being able to make these fights.
Growing pains.
Yeah. And I think, you know, like they tried it. They did the Mikaelian and Jai Apatia face off, and then they brought it down. Like, they obviously couldn't come to a deal for that fight, and they used
WBC brands. Was probably like, they famously have been beefing with Zuffa more than IBF.
Yes.
WBC, Mauricio was probably like, no way in hell this fight's happening. Or if it does happen, I'm in the ring. I'm everywhere.
That's probably that probably was what would happen, actually.
Yeah, because Daryl Peoples doesn't really do a lot of media.
No.
Mauricio
Suleiman
is like,
WBC is the most marketed governing body for sure, and the most visible, the most forefront. Mm-hmm. And Mauricio does like to put himself out there, obviously. And a lot of the other governing bodies don't do that. They kind of go behind closed doors. IBF is the one that actually stands on its ethics and its business, and will enforce things. WBC, they do bend quite a bit, and they will. But
Our friends at WBO have been locked in. Gustavo, my guy. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Yeah, that's
listener of the pod.
They're great. Obviously, that's
they're trying
the title
to do the right
that,
thing.
That's the title that I won. And listen, I've always thought that they were very even keeled, more so than a lot of the other promotions. WBA too, they do some funky things, way too many belts. But the WBO, I'm partial to it, obviously, because it's the belt that I have. But I think they stick to it. They're middle of the road. They're trying to do the right thing, which isn't always obvious in this sport. But yeah, but I don't know, man. This is this is something that I think is going to be unfolding for a while. But this is like. The first rockets have been fired, and there is an all out war now with these two, between the governing bodies and Zuffa. So,
did you see the WBC invited Zerto and Benavidez out to Mexico? They did a big face off, they did a big ceremony, and I'm watching it, and I'm looking at it. I'm like, oh, cool. And I It didn't dawn on me that the WBC is not involved with this fight because...
Oh, right, yes.
So then, it was a whole big spiel to say that we're making our commemorative belt.
Mm-hmm.
Since it's two Mexicans fighting, and WBC has to get involved somehow. So they fly him out to Mexico, do this whole big thing. The WBA and the WBO said, if they don't remove themselves, the WBC, from this fight, we are not sanctioning it. Of course, wow. The WBA has backtracked. WBO is locked in still. So unless the WBC wants to make a weird belt to some nonsense, that's just so hilarious.
I was thinking about this, Dan, and when I first saw that, I was like, there's the WBC wedging themselves in again. That's what they want to do. And listen, I get it. You got two Mexicans fighting. WBC is worldly recognized as the great Mexican champions.
It's not your
belt.
Champion,
exactly. But. Benavidez is still the 175-pound WBC champion, so that could be one of those situations like we saw with Shakur. You got to pay that insurance. That's what Mauricio. Actually, it wasn't even Mauricio who said that. It was Samson Lekowitz. He explained what that fee was about, and he called it an insurance policy. So if you go up a weight class, you just pay this portion, which is less than you normally would pay for a sanctioned fight, and that's an insurance that if you go up in weight and you fight there for another title and against another champion, and even if you get knocked out, if you lose, whatever, you're still the champion if you come back as long as you paid that sanction.
Isn't that what Shakur would refuse to pay?
Correct. But it was interesting to hear Samson explain it because he's a brilliant, brilliant guy. The way that he explained it as an insurance policy, I was like, that makes a lot more sense. That's interesting. I think the problem with Shakur and them was much more of a communication issue because it seems like you can push back on how much you pay and just, pay a smaller fee and go from there or negotiate. They just didn't do that. But so that was the only thing I would say about this current situation. But it is interesting that you're seeing the WBA and the WBO, specifically the WBO, sticking to their guns on this and being like, well, then we're not going to sanction the fight. So and now we've got them warring. We've got not only Zuffa and IBF, and now you've got the WBO and WBC warring.
Hopefully they come to a resolution. Because I do want those titles on the line, the legit titles on the line for that cruiserweight fight. Before we get into Fundora Thurman, some good news. ISIS CEO out of the hospital. I was in a coma after that fight with Jocelyn Camarillo, which was on Pro Box last weekend. Was some bad news that turned into some better news. I think she's released from the hospital now.
Yep. She's released from the hospital, which is amazing. Medically induced coma following the knockout loss. So she got knocked out last Saturday on a Pro Box undercard, the opening fight of the night. First round knockout right at the end of the round. Gets clipped with some good body shots, froze her, and she got hit with like three or four big shots and went down completely unconscious and couldn't revive her. She actually had a little bit of a seizure as they were taking her out of the ring. It was very, very scary. That was not shown on Pro Box, but we got to see it live. And then she was in a medically induced coma for a number of days. But it's amazing for her to have made a recovery and actually released less than a week later from being in a coma to being able to be home is an amazing thing. So thoughts and prayers out to her. She's a very sweet girl. Got to interview her for the fighter meetings. North Dakota, I believe she's from. But very, very, very sweet girl. And it's thank God that... she's been able to recover.
Really scary side of the sport. And you see a couple instances a year where you have traumatic brain injuries and moments like this. So for some go horribly wrong and then some are better. So I hope she has a full recovery. And obviously our thoughts are with ISIS, like, first. And then for Jocelyn, who has a very, very bright future, she signed with MVP. You hope that this doesn't affect her too much, as she has a lot of goals too. She just went in there to do her job.
And she did.
Ultimately did. And she did. So hopefully it doesn't affect her too much. Because I know she's a bright star and MVP has a lot of big plans for her. But ultimately, this is good news. So that's great. Let's get into our fight preview mode. Big fight. Big fight this Saturday night on PPV.com. Fundora Thurman. It's finally happening for Fundora's 154-pound title. Thurman is 38 years old. Oh, I just aged him. Thurman is 37 years old. Two fights since 2019. One fight since 2022. Can he chop down the tree that is Fundora for what will be Keith Thurman's best win of his career?
How long has this fight been in the making, by the way? This was supposed to happen.
Years.
Yeah, it's been literally been years. Keith ended up tearing his bicep probably like a year or so ago, right?
And then Fundora got hurt.
Yeah, I mean, a lot of start stop for both these guys, but we're finally here. It is finally happening. And it's good. It's a good fight. It's an interesting fight. I think when it first got announced, I was like, really? I'm like, Thurman hasn't done anything and hasn't really fought at this weight class, but he has had a win come back since the repaired bicep, and he scored a brilliant knockout over Brock Jarvis over in Australia. So you got like that, like, oh man, ooh, Thurman's still got it. He can still punch. So he's got a shot. But he's also very smart, and the way he goes about his training, he's very, very thoughtful guy. Strategically, I could see how Keith could figure out a way, because it's so hard to forget Brian Mendoza knocking Fundora's head off a couple years ago. Like, just brilliant knockout, just staying in the pocket and just trading with him and putting him down. Because that's the thing. Fundora stays in the pocket, dude. He's 6'6", but he fights you on the inside. And there's going to be opportunities for Keith with the overhand rights and the leaping left hooks that he could find a home. And he's apparently Fundora's not hard to find. Zhu hit him with huge shots in that second fight. He just didn't have enough firepower to stop him. So Keith has a real chance in this fight. I know he's probably a big underdog. What's the line? Do you know?
Yeah, according to DraftKings, Keith Thurman is a +280 underdog. Fundora is the -380. Favorite,
yeah.
Thurman by stoppage, +650.
Whoa.
Yep. That's the only path
got my
I
bet.
See Thurman.
You got my bet.
That's the only path I see Keith winning this fight is catching him like a Mendoza moment. And you got to remember, Mendoza was down on the cards. Fundora was boxing beautifully in that fight.
Yep.
And all of a sudden gets hit, and he does get hit a lot.
Timber
is correct. Opponents land 38% of their total shots on Fundora, 43% power.
Wow.
That is a huge, huge number. Defense has always been the issue with Fundora. He's like, since the Mendoza loss, Fundora is averaging 73 punches thrown around. That's great.
That's a lot.
He's out-throwing his opponents. His opponents are only throwing 33 per round. He's also jabbing a lot, 42 jabs per round, landing 7. This is since the Mendoza loss. But like I said, the defense is what comes to mind, or the lack of defense is what comes
porous
to mind.
Porous defense.
Porous.
Which is strange for high-level fighters. Generally, it's the defense is what separates the champions from everybody else, or the best fighters around. So it makes me scratch my head when you see a fighter at this level in such a dangerous weight class who gets hit this much. Is it just a matter of time? And Keith used to be one time. You know, he might be one time again. We'll see.
Time. That's a big narrative of this fight is time.
Yeah.
Like, is time on Father Time? Is it on the side of Keith one time Thurman? Because, like I said, one fight since 2022, two since 2019, one fight at 154 pounds, bicep injuries, inactivity, does have a track record of looking sharp. Despite long layoffs, he took a 2.5-year break between the Pacquiao loss and the Barrios win. He had a really lengthy layoff when he got back in the ring and fought Jose Cito Lopez, which, do you remember that fight? He was getting rocked all across the ring at Barclays.
Literally running from Jose Cito as he's trying to chase him down, hitting him with body shots.
Still got the win. So that's what the Keith backers, and that's what I think Keith is banking on. It's like, listen, I got He has the experience.
Yeah.
He has the experience. I have the guile. You know, I have the grit. But Thurman's side, I mean, on Fundora's side, you're looking at a guy that, you know, it's much younger, has been in wars. But if you peel back Fundora's resume, I mean, he's got two wins over Zou.
Mm-hmm.
And look what Zou has done.
Yeah.
One of the wins against Zou came after Zou got obliterated by Murtazaliyev. Then they had the bloody affair. And in that second fight with Zou, Fundora,
I thought he lost the first fight, though. I thought that Zou won the first fight.
Exactly. He's in close fight. The Lubin fight was, he was down in the Lubin fight. It was a bloody back and forth affair. Gets dropped by Mendoza. He's had three fights since winning the belt. Two against Zou and one against Jordell Booker.
Yeah, which doesn't hold a lot of weight.
So how are we rating Fundora? I understand he is the 154-pound champion. He's got the big green belt. So it's a very hard fight for me to look at. I mean, conventional wisdom wants to say, right, Fundora's younger. Thurman's been out for so long, 38, 37. You know, even the odds are favorable.
Plus 650, though, Dan.
Plus 650 I gotta, me dead
dude, nice. If there's a plus 650, I got to think Keith's got one more in him. that's my degenerate gambling mind creeping up on me. Like, dude, plus 650, Keith's gonna do it.
Could you imagine Keith Thurman pulling off this upset over Fundora at 37 years old? A lot of his other contemporaries are retired or out of boxing, and he's still chugging along. And he upsets the apple cart and completely disrupts the weight class, which is in total flux right now. And Keith Thurman is hoisting up the WBC 154-pound title. I mean, it's not that crazy to think about.
No, and also Spence is coming back. He's fighting Tim Zou. He's in the running. So we could see Keith Thurman and Errol Spence fighting for a junior middleweight world championship. How nuts is that?
What you're hearing right now is the smiling of PBC executives.
Yes.
that's their dream. That would be a PBC on Prime, a PPV.com pay-per-view in the second half of 2026. But yeah, I think Fundora should get the win. If once again, it's the same story with Fundora. If he sticks to his jab, if he fights at length, if he picks and chooses his spots. Yeah, I thought he fought a very intelligent fight against Zou in the second fight. No matter what you think of Zou in that second fight, it was still a very mature performance from Fundora. Still got tagged throughout the fight.
Yeah, he was losing rounds. He getting hit with huge shots. He had to battle back. He had to roar back as always. You know, he's what is he called? The Towering Inferno.
Correct.
Yeah. So, and that's how he fights. He fights just like a raging fire. He gets hit. He gets clipped. He gets hurt. He goes down. But he's got a big heart. And even in the Mendoza fight, he was trying to get back up because he was winning the fight. He's a tough guy to deal with because of the size, but also the grit. Zou really got beat by that. Zou had a really good round, and then Fundora came right back, and then Zou was like, "All right, that was my last hurrah. This guy's got too much juice." So, conventional wisdom. It's hard to see how Keith beats this kid, but at the same time, like I can see how he would. And
was he going to throw with him?
He's got to. You got to throw that overhand right because he is open for everything. But the problem is Thurman has had trouble with body punchers. He got hurt really bad by Collazo. He got hurt by Josecito. He got hurt by Manny Pacquiao. All to the body. Visibly hurt to the body. And Fundora's an excellent body puncher. He throws in with you. And that's the thing. You're going to take a lot of risks with Fundora because you got to punch with him. But, you know, he's got heavy hands too. And he throws a lot of punches, so there's going to be opportunities. But does Keith have the world-class power at 54? Because even at the high-class level at 147, he wasn't knocking, you know, the top flight guys out. So does he have the power at 54 to get rid of a true 54-pounder? That's really going to be the question, because he's going to land.
Yeah.
Keith is going to land. Yeah.
He's going to land some shots, but the Jarvis fight, I mean, that was a guy that was fighting at lightweight.
Yeah,
a few years ago.
I kept bringing that up when I was talking about on Pro Box. Like, oh, you look great in the Jarvis fight. I'm like, yeah, but the guy literally, I've seen the guy get knocked out at lightweight. So, you know, now he's fighting at 54 against Thurman, who is a good puncher. So, and he destroyed him, but that's exactly what they needed to rebuild Thurman to get him into this fight.
I love to play the what if game. And you could do a lot of what ifs with these two guys, because what if Thurman didn't get hurt in March of 2024 when he was scheduled to fight Zou? So then Fundora steps in, who was scheduled to fight Boachuk. Like, Boachuk could have beat Fundora in March 100%. Of 2024.
I thought he was going to that night.
And then everything is rewritten. And Fundora is not the unified champion. He ultimately gave up the WBO belt, which I thought was a mistake, but he was told to do that. The what-ifs are crazy. And like now Thurman, 2 years later, is right in this position. It's wild. And you bring up Spence, too. It's like Spence and Thurman have a long-time beef. There's a reason why they never fought at 147. It's mostly because Errol Spence he said he just didn't want to give the opportunity to Thurman.
That's such a crazy thing to do. I don't like you, so you're not going to get the opportunity.
He's like, he's corny. I remember doing interviews with Spence. He's corny. I remember being at the 2018 Showtime Up Front, which was a really cool event at Cipriani's in the city. It was like a big, like, everyone was wearing suits, and like, this was when U.S. boxing was maybe peaking. And all the PBC fighters were there in suits, and it was to roll out the whole schedule for the year for Showtime. And I had just started doing this media stuff. I went with my dad. My dad was my cameraman. Shout out Bob Canobio, CEO of CompuBox, willing to hold the camera for me. And I remember interviewing Spence. And Thurman walks by, and Thurman's got the belt because he was the champ at 147. And I'm not sure if Spence had a belt at that point. He might have been just about to win the IBF.
I think he had already beat Kell Brook. Yeah, I think.
Okay,
I think
he wanted what Thurman had. And Thurman's walking around with he's feeling good, Thurman. He hadn't lost yet. He hadn't even face pack. Yeah, he's riding high, Keith Thurman. And I just see Spence is just throwing like death stares at him, and he's like, you could just see him mouthing like, I fucking hate this guy. And he just never wanted to fight him to this day. And I would love to see, part of me would love to see Thurman win the fight and then Spence win the fight, and then
that would be like going in a time a time capsule or like a
hot tub time machine.
Yeah, a hot tub time machine to go back to 2018 when that fight would have been great.
Pictures. I got to post that. Yeah, that's what's on the line here too. And it's like you just think of Spence, but you think of what's going on at 154. This Zayas Boots fight, I'm hearing like it's almost done.
I've been hearing that too, but I thought that maybe because De La Hoya signed the new deal with DAZN that might reinvigorate discussions with the Virgil fight, but that's also, I think, me just being like, I want that fight so bad that I'm being hopeful. But I don't know, because there's so many moving parts to this discussion, and I'm flabbergasted that Top Rank is moving forward with the Boots fight for Zayas. I mean, that
doesn't make any sense. It's conventional wisdom would tell you as a boxing fan.
He's 23 years old. Yeah.
You're gonna go put him in with something.
That's 100% possible because I've talked to Xander about this, not this fight in particular, but he said he wanted Fundora like 2 years ago. He's like, I see something. I see where I can beat him. So he's very confident in his skills. The kid's awesome and he's getting better all the time. So maybe he does see something. But honestly, that's a tough fight for Boots too. I know Boots is fantastic and his backers, you know, say that he's the best around, but Xander's a tough out for anybody at 54. He's really big. He's got good legs. He's got a great gas tank. He boxes from the outside. You know, I've never really had to see Boots like have to walk a guy down and get to a guy who has that much physical advantages over him.
Karen, two fights, the 24 rounds Boots have with Karen at 147 is what people are looking at and saying, look with Zayas. Zayas is a better version of Karen. He's bigger. Maybe not as hard of a puncher, but if Boots might have some issues with...
He might not be as hard of a puncher, but he's a weight class above, if not more. Xander's a huge 54-pounder. I know Boots is too, but Karen was a regular-size 47-pounder, and he showed his physicality.
I love the fight. I hope it happens. It would excite... the boxing fan base would excite the DAZN subscribers. I think that Golden Boy signing with DAZN, you would think maybe it would invigorate the Virgil side, but I think Virgil's pretty locked into getting out of the Golden Boy contract. So I think it's just at a point where it's Golden Boy and Virgil have to work that out first. I think he's locked in. I think he's
Yeah, it's the thing, and that is the retort to what I was saying. Like, yeah, you know, Oscar re-signing with DAZN for a multi-year deal. It's like, okay, maybe we can reinvigorate the Virgil, but the problem is not just the deal. The problem seems to be the fractured relationship between Rick Berigian and Oscar De La Hoya. And also, when I say Rick Berigian, I mean Virgil as well. So it seems like they've gone past the business, and it's getting not that it's gotten personal, but it's like this might be a irreparable shift or you know, rift in their relationship.
Virgil Ortiz was not on the poster for the Golden Boy.
I saw that. That's
Oscar pettiness.
That's interesting. Is that petty? I mean, I think it would be. I don't know. I think that hurts Oscar more than anything else. Is that pettiness, or is I think that actually hurts him? I took it the other way. I took it as, oh wow, maybe this is further along, you know, Virgil getting out than I think, because he's already not being represented on the team. Because you want your roster to be as strong as possible, so you want Virgil on there.
Yeah.
If you're sure. Oscar.
Yeah. If Andorra wins, he should fight Virgil. They had some back and forth. I think the Ring magazine show brought it up to Fundora and was like, oh, Fundora should fight Virgil on the September Canelo Mexico versus the World card. And that would make sense. If Boots fights Zayas in June, and then Fundora fights Virgil, if it's September, hopefully earlier than that, then, you know, you got something here, 154. Those are the four top guys. But then Keith Thurman can throw a wrench into everything, which is an absolutely wild statement that I just made. Keith Thurman is still around.
In 2026. It's 2026.
Keith Thurman's still around, and there's a juicy bet here. So let's have our prediction for Thurman, Fundora. I'm probably going to stick with Fundora by late TKO. I just think I'm going to throw away all the other stuff and just stick with – just think about a fight. Just think about getting older. Just think about a guy that's peaking, even though he has flaws, Fundora. Too much inactivity from Thurman. Fundora, I think, is the better of the two. I like Fundora late stoppage, 10th round on.
Yeah, that's the safe bet, and that's almost certainly what's going to happen. But if I were a betting man, and sometimes I am, I'm throwing money on Thurman by stoppage.
Plus 650.
It's just too juicy for me not to sprinkle. Just a sprinkle. But ultimately, I agree with you. I think it's going to be Fundora's night, and I think he is going to stop him late. 37 years old, going 12 rounds with a guy like that. And that's the thing about when you fight Fundora, you have to be switched on the entire time. He can hit you at any point because he's so long. And there's no reprieve. We saw that with Zhu. Zhu had no time to rest. Zhu would throw his combination. He would try to step out, and he's still in range. You're still in range. You're in range at all times because the guy is so tall. So at 37 years old, without having the ability to rest, and you got this guy coming on and on and on and on, he's very aggressive. It's going to be hard to see him see the final bell. But, yeah, I don't know. I think it's going to be an excellent fight either way.
Yeah, it's going to be a good one. Undercard, you got Yoenis Teyes, 154 pounds. He's fighting Brian Mendoza, who famously knocked out Sebastian Fundora. Mendoza's got a few losses in the last couple of years, but is game as they come. I think about his fight with Zhu, when he was just – that's one of the toughest, grittiest performances I've seen from a B-side in a really long time. A top name at 160, Yo-Yo Hernandez, who people are very high on, is fighting Terrell Gaucha. He's a problem,
okay.
Right?
Okay. Perennial gatekeeper. Terrell Gaucha, he's fought everybody. Everybody has to get through him. Tim Zhu did, and he actually got dropped in that fight. But yeah, he's excellent, really, really good. So I'm curious to see what he can do with a guy like a veteran like Gaucha. But yeah, that's interesting. That's a good one.
And then we got Elijah Garcia, who's had an up and down start to his career.
I've called a bunch of his fights. I mean, he's got a knockout win over Resendiz, doesn't he? And Resendiz is a current world champ. I'm pretty sure he does.
Was Elijah Garcia? I thought he was like 20-something years old.
I thought maybe...
I have his box rec up right here.
Is it there or no?
Yeah, he did beat Resendiz. You're right.
I told you. I called that fight. And it was a great fight. It was a great fight. And I was like, wow, this kid... I actually DM'd him after the fight. And was like, man, that was really impressive. I thought that was a pick 'em fight. And you know, he showed real class. And he's got a win over Vidal Jr. Like, yeah, he was looking really, really good. And then he loses to Tyrone Davis, who Tyrone's good. You know, he had a really tough fight with Terrell Gaucha. He's fighting Kevin Newman. That's my buddy.
Yeah.
I used to spar with Kevin back in Vegas like a million years ago. But okay. Yeah, Elijah Garcia, up and down. Guy's got a lot of talent, but like he's underperformed at the higher levels. But yeah, he's got a knockout win over a current world champion.
Who's fighting Munguia on May 2nd card.
Right, right. Yeah, I knew that. I called that fight.
I think Yo-Yo could make some noise at 160, Hernandez.
Yes, absolutely. Especially with the landscape of 160 and the way it is.
He's very good. And this guy Iglesias is really good too. He's fighting IBF title in a few weeks.
Iglesias is scary. He's scary good.
Adames is moving up to 168. We talked about that on the last episode, which I think is the right move. So, pretty good card. PPV.com is the place to watch it. I'll be in the live interactive chat hosting. Moses Atalma also in action earlier in the day versus Jermaine Franklin. Atalma is a -2,000 favorite, according to DraftKings. The big number here, Chris, in Atalma versus Franklin is 6.5 rounds. Atalma has spent only 7 minutes and 42 seconds in the ring over his last 3 fights, 3 knockouts. Will the fight go more than 6.5 rounds?
I say yes.
Wow.
I say yes. I think this is a really good test, a perfect fight for Atalma. And actually, I called this after Atalma's last fight. I wanted to see him with Jermaine Franklin because of the durability, the hand speed, the endurance. And he's got grit. Jermaine Franklin's a gritty guy. He's going to try and win. I was really impressed with his performance against AJ, where he was completely outgunned, you know, in terms of firepower, but wouldn't go away. You know, took great shots. Joshua is a real puncher. Joshua jabbed a lot that night, but Jermaine was in that fight. He was throwing combinations. He was backing AJ up at times. I think he's going to push Atalma, and I think we're getting a lot of answers about what Atalma really is. Listen, if he goes out there and blows him out, which is very possible because Atalma is extremely explosive and young and comes out of the gate fast, but I do think we're actually going to get rounds and we're gonna have to see what Atalma can do with a guy that he can't just blow out.
Yeah.
I like the over 6.5 bet.
See, it's like a no-win situation, I feel like, for Atalma. It's like we get rounds and we're going to be like, oh, this guy, you know, he's not, is he even that good? Like, the hype is off of him. Let's pump the brakes a little bit. If it's like the 8th round and Franklin...
Well, and if he blows him out, people are going to be like, oh, Jim Franklin was shot.
Yeah, right. You know? So it's like, I want to see rounds from Atalma.
Yeah,
like, I don't want to see a quick blowout. Like, I want to see this guy. I don't think Franklin's going to push him, per se. Like, he's crafty. He's never been dropped in 149 rounds, let alone stopped. No stop. 26 fights, never.
And he's fought some real punchers. Fought some real punchers.
What, Joshua?
Joshua, and he just beat the Ukrainian champion, amateur standout, Dishko. Ivan Dishko.
Yeah, Jermaine Franklin was picked for a reason. He's in there to do a job. He fought Dillian White, big puncher, Jerry Forrest, Rydell Booker. He's been in there with some names. But
Dillian White's a big puncher.
Big time. You might not like him as a fighter, but he can crack. Atalma, now they're saying very close to a title shot, which is like such a modern day boxing thing where if this was like the 90s, 2000s, like Atalma would be fighting 5-6 times a year, which I think he should. But since there's such a lack of heavyweights and it's so top heavy, it's like Warren is going to put him in this type of position where they're moving him like a heavyweight titleist already. 2 fights a year after this fight.
But he did get hurt. He did get hurt. This fight was supposed to be a couple months back.
But even if not, like the point is he's not being moved like a phenom that's, 10-0?
Yeah, he's 13-0.
13-0, don't you agree we should see him more?
And so, all these comparisons about, you know, young Mike Tyson, Mike had an extensive amateur background. Mike fought in the Olympic trials. So, like, when these comparisons are not correct, you cannot call him, like, the next Mike Tyson. Like, he's not the same thing.
We just don't know anything about him. Like, he's doing more interviews this week because he has to. He went on Ariel's show.
We might learn on Saturday, man. I'm telling you.
I hope so. I want to see rounds. It's a 10-round fight. 6.5 over under. Jermaine Franklin, like I said, never been dropped. But they're looking at the Wardley Dubois winner. But there's one problem is that we're running into in boxing more often now is that Atalma and Wardley train at the same gym. Like he stopped short of saying they're friends. They're not like Shakur Stevenson, Keyshawn Davis level friends. But he said it could get awkward. And Ben Davison doesn't have a spar for a reason. And we're teammates. Like I don't want to hear that. But like if Wardley wins, Wardley's going to be looking at Usyk. Or he could be looking at Cabiel, or he could be looking at Atalma. So that's just the way Atalma's being moved right now.
I'm going on record. Fuck your friends. You got to fight. all of these guys who are like, I'm not going to fight my friend. I can understand not fighting your brother, the Klitschko brothers. They're like, I'm never going to fight my brother. Understood. Friends? Come on, guys. A lot of money on the line. It is a sport. Legacy's on the line. Yes, it's a fight sport. Yes, it's a combat sport. It's still a sport. You're still going to be splitting millions of dollars and titles. Fucking fight each other.
Fuck your friends, Chris Algieri.
Fuck your friends. Get in there and fight.
Yeah, I think Atalma, push comes to shove, would fight Wardley for a title. The Keyshawn Shakur thing fight. Is just like, that's a whole nother level. I talked about this with Najee in the last episode. Like, eventually, if they both keep winning, Shakur and Keyshawn, there's going to be a lot of pressure on both of them, and then egos get involved. One guy feels a certain way. Keyshawn's like, why is Shakur getting all the praise? I'm better than him. I've been getting the better of him in sparring. Says one thing on an interview.
Yep.
Says one thing on the competitive line.
Yeah, the competitiveness will come out of both those guys. And, you know, if there's enough money on the line and they can just get a little jibber-jabbing back and forth, that fight happens.
Right. There's like a falling out between Shakur and Keyshawn, and then you have a storyline. Juicy.
Yeah. You got two high performers like that, man. It's very possible that, like, exactly what you said, the scenario you said. It's like, oh, well, why is he getting all the attention? I'm better than him. You know, like, you're the best in the world? No.
These
I'm
guys best have in the world. Freaking that, on stream all the time now. They have cameras in front of them 24/7. They're liable to say something stupid.
This streaming world is wild, bro.
Apparently, I'm going to be on a stream.
I was on a stream on Sunday when I did that MMA show. It was all streamers. I was calling the fights with streamers.
Be careful what you say.
Yeah, I was. They were on the entire time, like in the back, like in the dressing rooms. I was like, I'm gonna get changed. Can you get your damn cameras out of here?
Chris is taking a piss. Let's get this.
Yeah, like you really got to be careful what you say. Like I was giving my phone number to one of the guys because he was gonna come down to the fight on Pro Box, and he's a streamer, and he was like, yeah, but let's wait till we get off her stream. And I was like, good eye, dude. My phone would have been out. We would have been out there.
On a my phone number right would have been
just out there. Yeah.
Yeah. This.
It's the Truman Show. We live in the Truman Show. We're constantly
freaky movie, bro. Great movie.
Yeah. That's a good movie. We should do movie recs on our show. Well, on our episodes, Truman Show. If you haven't watched it, guys, go watch it for all the young heads who watch our show, and maybe aren't into the movies the way that they aren't cinephiles. Go watch Truman Show. That's a wild.
I think a lot of people have seen it, but if you haven't.
We have some young listeners. Maybe they haven't.
Yeah, the demographic at our fight party was pretty young. I was pretty cool. There's a lot of I like that. I like that a lot. Big fight weekend. We'll be back Sunday to recap it all. Fundora Thurman recap, Atalma recap, and any other news and notes. Pro Box recap. A lot of boxing from here on out.
And Brian Acosta and Ronnie Rios. It's a loser leaves town type of fight. Both guys coming off losses. Both guys coming off knockout losses. Ronnie Rios lost to Nick Ball. He got stopped in, I think, 10 or 11 rounds. And then Brian Acosta got completely shut out and destroyed by Suleiman Sagawa in his last fight. This is a must-win for both guys.
Yeah, Pro Box is on a heater, man. It's pretty cool to watch. I was watching Lester's win.
Yeah,
it was like 80,000, 70,000 or 80,000 in the live, watching live at one point.
Wow.
Huge number.
That's a huge number. That's a huge number. And it was insane in there. It was
so loud.
It was probably 2,000-3,000. You could hear it on the, because I haven't watched it back yet, but you could tell how loud it was in there.
Like, I was like, wow. But then when you guys left the shot open after for the transition into the press conference, mm-hmm. And when everyone cleared out, the lights came on, it wasn't like a huge arena.
No, not at all.
It was all flat. But it was like, it sounded like it was 15,000 in there.
The CEO, Gary Jonas, was like, damn, he's like, we should have put this in a bigger arena. Like, well, they sold out a week in advance. They opened up 200 more standing room only, sold out immediately. Wow. He was like, damn, we're actually selling places out now. What are they thinking next for Lester? I believe August. They're gonna have him fight right before Canelo in September.
Stay on that schedule.
Yep. And potential, probably LA. So I didn't know this. 1.5 million registered Guatemalans in LA alone. That's registered. So there's even more. I was blown away by that. I didn't expect that number. And they came out. So if they come out for Lester in August, man, it could be something serious. And I think we're thinking about some big venues. What's the big LA venue?
Dodger Stadium.
No, not that big.
Olympia Stadium. Olympic Stadium.
Where Lomachenko fought.
Staples Center.
I think Staples. Yeah.
Wow, that's really big.
Yeah. That's really big.
It's not called Staples Center anymore. I don't know. I refuse to call it what it's called now.
They always change names.
Yeah, Ronda Rousey's fighting Gina Carano. I was talking. That's the type of stream that I'm going to be on, Fight Week, and that's at the Intuit Dome, May 17th.
Oh, okay.
That's where the Clippers play. That's the brand new state of the art one.
Wow,
it's nice. Fucking crazy looking in there. All right, that's our episode. Hope everyone enjoyed it. Hope you enjoyed the fights this weekend. If you're gonna bet. Use DraftKings, and if you're going to watch it on PPV.com. I'll be the live interactive host. Enjoy the weekend. Chris, any final words?
No. Excuse my voice. I'm a little under the weather from traveling so damn much, but a lot of good fights, and we'll talk about the fallout of whatever happens on Saturday night. Are we going to do a live immediately after?
Live to tape.
Yeah, but okay. All right. Inside but like immediate boxing, reaction?
Not live.
Because I'll probably be still at the venue for Pro Box.
We'll figure it out.
Yeah, all right.
All right, everyone. Enjoy the weekend. Protect yourselves at all time. Keep your hands up all the time. Stay out of those DMs. We out.